Hello, welcome to Splinters. This is Gary Rogowski. Thank you very much for joining me. Today's chat is entitled, Why Bother? Well, I am alive and well. There was some question of this a few weeks ago. Well, no, a month ago now. There were grass fires burning, on three sides of my place, a few hundred yards away, some a little bit closer than that. So there was some serious questioning how well I was. But we were lucky. We had good winds. We had great firefighting support by the Department of Natural Resources, the DNR, and the U.S. Forest Service. And we had paid over the years some careful attention to fire suppression in our community. And so we made it through unscathed, but we were fortunate. Some folks further down the road weren't so lucky. And it only goes to show that fire is a capricious and unfair judge. The effects of such an event, really, they cannot be overstated. I watch ground crews, trucks, water tankers, and then air support in this effort to move fire away from structures. The new approach now to fighting fires is not to put them out, but to move them away from structures and see if you can contain them, set a line, and see if you can hold it inside those fire lines. And it was astonishing to watch, and also noisy, smoky, loud, and terrifying. We had planes flying right over my house, but 200 feet above me. And since I live on the ridge top with a steep canyon to one side, they were also flying below me later on. It was amazing to watch. Well orchestrated, efficient structure and life-saving, which is why the quiet of the days that followed the event make it so surreal. This, of course, is in the nature of natural events. Calamities like this build and stack up, and then enormous pressure is released in the form of eruptions or floods or fires. In John McPhee's great book on geology, Basin and Range, he talks about one geologist who steadfastly believed in slow evolutionary organic change occurring over millennia. Then he heard a lecture, saw some solid data, and something awakened in him to what was really there. And he went out immediately and bought earthquake insurance for his home. A fire event is catastrophic, or can be. And then a few days later, the sun is shining again, and the questions in one's head about reality or surviving or fate pop up like weeds after a rainfall. What was I doing just before it happened, and what did I feel? Post-event, the questions are a bit different, but just as startling. What chance do I really have to save my shop, my little studio, my home in the face of such fury? A few weeks ago, I was hoping better than 50-50. Today, I feel a little less sure of things. I know if this current weather holds, we have some low temps and higher humidities, and small fires won't get turned into big ones. But we've got some hot weather coming again, and it's dry as a bone out here. A simple drive down the county highway nearby tells you that not everyone escaped. Some lost a little, some lost everything. It was a hopscotch of opportunity and bad fortune. In the face of that kind of catastrophe, forget the go bag. What about the psyche bag? What do I throw into that? What's really important to me? And can I face losing everything if the next burner brings unfavorable winds? Do you start over? And with what? Yourself, perhaps. I have a student who engages with me in discussions about creativity. Ali's question to me over these years has always been, why bother? What difference will it make if I spend 12 months or 12 years diving into a topic, a craft, a life choice? Why not just dabble a little bit here and see if I like it, and dabble a little bit in something else later and see if I like that? I am not here to argue anyone into following footsteps, certainly not my footsteps. We each come to this life with our genetic predispositions, and then we shave and pare and we pound them into shape with our experiences and bad luck, mayhem, and good fortune. It is a wonder to me that we are able to stay focused on anything at all when the reality of how short our time is here comes into a full and clear view. In my recent case, compliments of a catastrophe. When the level 3 go now signal came, this thought always comes to mind. It could have been a jeweler. You know, I could have had stuff I could pack up in an attaché case. When the final evac notice came, I started packing up furniture. And all I could get were 8 pieces. I have far more than that. I got 8 pieces into my little SUV. Not large items, but all quite flammable. So I instantly lamented my choices, what I had to leave behind. But that's the choice you have to make. And if I return and everything was gone, well, that's something else you have to face. Now, ashes to ashes is the inevitable conclusion one can draw about our lives and fires and all that. And yet, I'm not quite ready to go there. Nor am I so much of a gambler that I can just sit back down at the table again and say to life, deal 'em. No, I am the crazy contemplative sort, and I have no answer for myself right now. If everything had gotten burned up, what would I have done? Or what would I do? I don't know. I'm here now. I've committed all my resources into being a woodworker, not a jeweler, and a teacher of it second. The writing that I do, this podcast, this is more like breathing now. This has become a part of me. And I cannot rid myself of that, and I can carry it with me wherever I go. But I imagine if everything gets blown up or burnt up or lost in a flood or a hurricane these days, you reassess what now is really important to you. And you take what's left and work with that. Everyone's path is different. Some of us have poorer luck than others. I say get out in front of your own luck and do some stuff that will help you feel better each day. Do those things that will increase your chances for survival and for getting through a catastrophe. You may still get run over, but this life is not paved with majestic pathways to success. It is littered with folks who gave up. I can't blame them. I just have to step around them politely and move on up the road. For me today, it means doing more fire prevention stuff around my buildings, ember protection. But it also means getting to the bench and doing some things that have been sitting around for too long. Maybe it's the same way for you too. Try and find what's important. Insert music. You know, big band kind of music man, 76 trombones, sort of. Because this is now the shameless promotion part of the podcast. I am so bad at this stuff, advertising, but I got to tell you about it. And so here's the thing. The online mastery program is coming up. We hope to start in late October. We get enough folks, and I would love to do that. On September 27th, 9 a.m. Pacific time, I'm going to host a Zoom meeting. Go to our website and you can register for that. And the first 100 folks are free. And it's an online mastery program preview class. So I'll talk about the curriculum and the projects that we do, show you some images of pieces that folks have done. And I've invited a couple of students to join me to talk about the program, answer your questions. It's fun. I did it last year, and it was really fun, and you're welcome to join us. The other thing I'm doing with the Mastery Program is offering a third year again, cleverly titled OMP 3.2. I've been hanging around too many computer guys. Anyway, this third year program is only open to Mastery students, and it's about design, but this time it's about the design of a production piece. A stool project that I designed a long time ago and have made dozens and dozens of these pieces, quite a few. But it's a production piece. And I never go into the build doing one. My standard now is always 4, because that brings my time down. But it is a jig-heavy project. And because otherwise it would just take forever. You know, I'm trying to hit 10 hours for each individual stool. I don't think I've ever gotten there. A little bit higher. But that is done with jigs for holding, jigs for drilling, jigs for routing, shaping. A lot of handwork still, quite a bit of handwork, but there are a lot of jobs, and particularly with compound angles, it creates all sorts of issues. I'm not like those slacker Windsor folks who use round tenons. Come on, how easy? Get one angle, move it over for the second angle, boom, drill a hole. With a cabinet maker's approach to chair making that I have, you can mortise at an angle, put your shoulders on your tenons. If they're not barefaced, they have to be angled. So there are some challenges. Anyway, it's a fun piece, and I want to show my students how to do it. They can make as many as they like, and I'd like to see that live on. So I'm hopeful that we'll get enough folks to do that. And then the second half of this third-year program is designing a dining chair. And our goal there is we'll have only 8 weeks of class. So our goal there is to get a prototype built. So much information can be gotten from a prototype. Suitable prototype, you can check the angles, check the comfort, you can do some playing around with techniques in joinery. I know I did that when I did a prototype for my cafe chair. So it's really a valuable thing. And chair design is so much fun. I recently went on a trip to Europe recently, phew, months ago, 4 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, and visited the Copenhagen Design Museum, which was astonishing. So great. You should go there. If you're in Denmark, go to the Design Museum. And chairs, there's a lined hallway, I don't know, 50 chairs in it, and a little bit of information on each. Yeah, really great. Great to see. And also a lot of other great stuff in that museum. Japanese sword guards, Asubas, a huge collection. A huge collection. Backed up with a collection 5 times larger. It's amazing. It's just amazing. I've always found it fascinating how the Japanese culture can marry war with beauty. Anyway, that was great. And so I'm gonna do a real dive into the Hans Wegner Y chair and really take a look at it. It's a very interesting dissection of probably the most famous chair in the world. You've seen it dozens of times. Open a design magazine. Open a magazine that's selling paint, and there's this chair sitting around a dining room table. They're everywhere advertising photography because they're low. They're pretty looking, and they say comfort. Danish modern design says comfort, says home. So we'll get into all those topics in that OMP 3.2 class. For you, I can offer the online mastery program. If you're not at that level, then think about joining us for the setting up shop class. That 12-week series will start this coming January, I hope. It'll be on Saturday mornings, Saturday my morning, and we run for 2 hours covering basic topics, shop flow, concepts of woodworking, tools and machines, and then strategies for building, things you need to think about. I think the concept of flow is hugely important. You know, just understanding how we can put rocks in our path. I'm so guilty of this. How we can put these boulders in our way and then walk around them. And it changes your flow. It's really very simple. I don't know why we do this, but everyone seems to a certain extent. There are ways of managing this and understanding it and spotting it. And the setting up shop class has been great fun. This will be our third effort at it. So please consider joining me. If I see you at the Texas Woodworking Festival or the Pacific Northwest Expo or Woodworking in America, there's a discount, a show discount. So come on by the booth and say hi and sign up. All right, enough shameless promotion. Cue the music and I'll walk out the door. Thank you very much for your time and consideration. I appreciate your support. I really appreciate you listening and sending me notes. It's great to hear from folks. So thank you for that. Take care. Do good work. Adios.